Here's what you missed on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
I want to talk with you about the globalists. What made them so greedy? What made them so evil?
The reason the globalists are upset is because the public is now realizing this is life and death. This is serious, folks. When I tell you that they're in trouble, that doesn't mean we're winning. It just means we have a fighting chance that we're in the game. And everybody needs to have the maximum effort right now to get the word out, or these people are going to win.
Now we take you back to the night of July 8th, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, back now to the telephones, and Stan, are you there?
I am here.
All right. I've promised people active phone lines, so we got to do it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Tennant. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Janie, and I live in Fort Myers, Florida.
Hi, Janie.
How are you?
Fine.
I've been walking down the same road that Stan has walked and run into some interesting information that I wanted to share. Another gentleman was working on Bible codes and wrote a book called The Signature of God. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
I've heard the title. I haven't seen it.
Okay. He was using 22 spaced intervals and coming up with sentences such as, Yeshua is my name, Yeshua is gift, and I don't have the book here, or I could give you some other ones, but he also used the 22 interval spacing to determine some of the prophetic things such as Hitler, the Third Reich.
Okay, that's Drosnin's work you're talking about.
Yeah,
well, I'm not sure. Yeah, the Third Reich was mentioned in there.
Yeah, that's basically, that's the part of this that is not valid. The codes that have been detected statistically are valid, but the interpretations about Hitler and Yeshua and Joe Camel and Buddha, all that's been done too. Are not valid,
right.
There are sound technical reasons why that's true.
I understand. I asked this and didn't get back to it. If I were to have Mr. Drosnin on the program with you, and there would be an ensuing debate about his interpretation of the coding and yours, what form would that take?
Well, I would stand on three pieces of information. First thing I would do, and I just pulled this out of my bookshelf while we were on commercial break here, and I know not everyone has a statistical reference library, but I happen to have a few books. This is from Reasoning About Luck by Vinay Ambigaokar, published by Cambridge University Press. It's a recent publication. It's a scholarly publication by a quality statistician. On page 9, he says, quote, about statistics, it's worth making the point that the concept of probability makes sense only when there is some understanding or working hypothesis about what is going on. What that means is that although the numerical results that the statisticians have obtained are correct, their meaning is completely undecidable unless and until there's a working hypothesis. And that's what's been missing. And the benefit of a working hypothesis of a model is that it enables you to sort the real, meaningful results you have from results that you know you can expect to occur by virtue of accidents alone. You can't tell the difference between a coincidence or an accident and a real data point without a model. And that's the problem. The Hitler, Yeshua, rabbi name, because I'm not trying to just be negative here. These shorter codes that say Rabin, assassin, will assassinate are not legitimate because they fail the basic principle of probability theory. There is no working hypothesis. Now, that's the first leg I'd stand on, and I think any statistician would have to back me up on that, including the people who did the work.
Well, if I can get Mr. Drosnin on, would you be interested in such a debate?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Hold on. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Tennant.
Hi.
Hi.
Stephen in Victoria.
Victoria, B.C., all right?
Yeah. First of all, Art, That piece of rock that you received from the pyramid?
Yes.
How close to your computer and your cameras did you have it?
Not close enough.
That make not your TV screen go out too, you know.
That's worth a try.
Yeah, you might want to remove it from the room or something.
It's not in the room.
Okay. I was just going to make probably a major comparison. Most religions, when people are trying to find God, they're either in prayer, or if they can't find God, then they're asking for God, so their hands are outstretched. So it's fairly symbolic that it would come back to the hands themselves.
Yes.
And with regards to the pyramid, it's probably something that God had created and left there as a testament. The Egyptians, in their evolution and everything else, probably moved into it at some point in time. And they'll probably find at some point in time that there will probably be a connection between Moses and the pharaohs, and something to do with the golden calf that might actually be hidden somewhere in the Great Pyramid itself.
Well, people hold beliefs like that, and everyone really has a right to their beliefs and to work through them.
Mm-hmm.
I try not to pay a lot of attention to traditional teachings at the word level. I've been trying to do, in spite of my personal beliefs, an analysis of the physics of what I see, and in the case of the Bible text, the sequences of letters. And so I heard the story that you've just told us from others. I think that it's important that you work through what you believe to be true, but it's not something that I can focus on.
Yeah.
I think that we are the agent, assuming that I'm an Orthodox Jew, so I can say assuming there is a God, but I don't think you have to believe that. I'm saying assuming that there's a God, that we are the agents by which God works, that if God made the pyramids, he used us to do it, because I don't see any need for a miracle there.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get into the physics that explains some of this legends about meditation and initiation, but in fact there are rational explanations for the alleged properties of the pyramid that are much more spiritually sound than simply jumping to a miracle. That's part of the problem with the Bible codes, jumping to this prophetic level and jumping over the empowering level of real understanding.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Stan Tenen.
Yes. You want me now?
That's you.
This is Rebecca in San Diego.
Hi.
Right.
And Mr. Tenen, I just want to say that I deeply, deeply love you, love what you're doing, and you may not consider yourself much of a saint, but I consider you a spiritual giant. You know, you're not a Pharisee, but let's face it, the Pharisees were the ones that crucified Christ. They missed it altogether. The question I have is, I've always had a deep desire in my heart, being a Christian, to get a pure translation of the Bible. And I've been told that I've never quite trusted the translation that I'm reading. And I've been told that there's been changes made, like, this is like a crude example, but when it was originally written, it was written something like, my stomach would praise the Lord. And when it was translated, it would be translated something like, my soul would praise the Lord. Or they changed what was originally said. And I was wondering if your works are going to help to get back to the original translation of the Bible.
Well, yes, actually, if these theories that we're working with check out, then one of the things we've discovered by taking an analytic scientific approach is that we've actually found a way of rationally assigning meanings to each of the Hebrew letters.
Right.
And we've discovered that the meanings we found by this rational analytic process actually match up with the traditional letter name meanings for letters, but that the benefit of our operational meanings is that you could actually add them together to figure out what the root word means. So that, for instance, the word that we translate now as Sabbath, which we know is, in a colloquial sense, means the seventh day of the week,
right.
The actual Hebrew letters say to sit within yourself, which
beautiful.
Implies meditation.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That's also why Jews are taught, in my opinion, this isn't a rabbinic teaching, this is from my work. That's why I believe Jewish tradition teaches that you don't tarry outside of the home on the Sabbath. You sit within yourself. You don't take outside and do work. And so if you go to the letter level and read it letter by letter, you can get a more accurate sense of the meaning. In terms of translations of the Hebrew Bible, I think your best way to proceed would be to get as many different translations as you can find and do your own comparison.
Right.
I don't think that one can express the full meaning of the Hebrew in any one English translation. That's true of any great work. It's not just true of the Bible. You can't translate Shakespeare very well into French unambiguously. I'm sure there's some beautiful translations, but I'm sure they're not all the same. So I think that if you want to get a deeper sense of what the actual Bible is saying and get away from some of the mythological interpretations that our religious traditions have shaded there, maybe, I'm certainly inadvertently, but inevitably, then get a Hebrew version, get a Catholic version, get a Christian version, even if you can find, get a Muslim version, and read an older version and a more recent one, read a critical edition, and read a very plainly written one.
Mm-hmm.
And trust your own work to lead you where you need to go.
Right.
Don't trust me or experts. I'm not a guru. When you're listening to another person, even if they're a saint, you're just listening to another human being. When you listen to your heart, honestly, then you might be listening to God.
You got it.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. And good morning. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Stan Tennant. Hi.
Yes, Art.
Yes, sir.
Love your show. This is Jeff from Gulfport, Mississippi.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Tennant,
mm-hmm.
Is that right, Tennant?
Yeah.
Okay. I was real interested in especially your earlier show that you had, what, about a month ago or whenever?
Yeah, just a month ago.
And anyway, I started fiddling with, I was interested in the concept, so I started fiddling with the Hebrew a little bit. And anyway, I was using a sequence of seven in a progressive bass, a 7 and a 7 bass, progressing to a 12 bass, but I was using 7 in each bass. Anyway, I've uncovered a complete sentence, but I've only done one. I don't know if I can repeat it throughout the text. I just started at the beginning. In the beginning, God created heaven, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but anyway, using that bass, it came out... man and woman, through sloth and desire, alas, will perish. It's kind of weird, but that's the way it came out. And I was wondering, have you tried any progressive basses like that?
Well, actually, yes and no. I haven't tried anything like that, and I wouldn't even know how to evaluate how technically accurate it would be to do such a thing. What I've tried to do is to go back to technology and understanding that we know is available several thousand years ago. And so I'm basically trying to limit myself to the understanding of the calendar and of weaving and embroidering and brocading and working with wood and the simple cooking and household skills and farming and skills that we know people had. Because from that context, I can be reasonably sure that I'm not making up something, that
yeah.
The tools I'm using and the tools they were using are similar. And I'm digging in similar earth, I'm likely to be on the right track. And if I use more modern ideas, it's hard for me to understand if they're appropriate.
The reason I used a 7 bass and progressed it to 12 was because of the scribes during the time of the writing. So I thought that would be an interesting way to do it.
And well, I don't know anything about that, and I guess I feel like our audience feels I'm not really following completely what you were saying, so I guess we're all sort of in that same boat. I would say, Jeff, that maybe you want to go to some local college and take it to some math professor and have them look over what you did, and maybe they can give you some clues as to whether it's a meaningful thing to do and what it might mean.
All right. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Stan Tennant. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is John from Columbus, Ohio.
Yes, sir.
John.
And I was wondering if any of your research goes back to the Kabbalah.
Yes. I didn't start with any interest in the Kabbalah. I'd never even heard the term when I started. But what's turned out is that these models that we found by lining up the letters in the Hebrew text of Genesis actually make sense of Kabbalistic texts that are now in dispute are only translated as mythology or poetry.
Okay, because I believe there's a passage that says that Moses knew the ways of God, but Israel saw the acts. In other words, like, Moses knew how to do it, and Israel just saw it done.
There's some truth to that. The context of the situation at Mount Sinai is that Moses and the people were in a state of synesthesia, where it's actually said that they heard the images and saw the sounds.
Okay.
And that's indicative of a psychological state of meditation.
Right.
And people have reported that in various different spiritual experiences in a wide range of traditions.
Right, and I've had many experiences and done meditation for 25 years.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering, is there a number or something where I can get your work?
Well, I was hoping that Art would give me an opportunity to give out information on how people can get in touch with us.
All right, go
can
right.
Do that?
Yes, do it now.
Okay, well, the best and easiest way is if you can get up on the Internet. We have a website. It's the normal prefixes, and then www.meru, M-E-R-U, Mary Edward Reagan Upside, .org, O-R-G, we're a nonprofit, so we get an org designation.
Right.
And you can write to us for introductory information on our work, which is not about pyramids and is mostly about the alphabet and the text of Genesis.
But
sure. We'll send you an introductory packet. We're Meru Foundation, M-E-R-U, P.O. Box 503, and that's in Sharon, S-H-A-R-O-N, Sharon, Massachusetts. Massachusetts is M-A, and the zip is 02067.
All right. Is there any phone number?
If people want to order our material as listed on the website or want a free number that can be relayed to us for information, you can dial 888-422-MERU.
Why don't you just give me the numbers? Do you know the numbers?
Of what?
888-422, and then what are the rest of the numbers?
Oh, gee, I don't have them. I just learned it that way myself. It would be 6378. I got that right off my phone.
I learned something in doing commercials and giving out numbers. Some people respond well to the letters, and other people don't respond at all well to them. And so if you're going to do that sort of thing, you're best off giving out both. It would be 888-422-6378, correct?
I believe that's correct. 6378 MERU. The reason I use the letters is because that's the way I could remember it.
I understand. But everybody has a
better
different...
Better to look at the website or drop us a line. Let me say, we were enormously pleased with the response we got from the last show. We sent out about 500 packets. Some of them went out later. We are a nonprofit, so we use nonprofit bulk mail. But it still costs us a couple of $1,000, and we really are a nonprofit. So if people can help us out a little bit, we'd greatly appreciate it. We'd like to provide the material, and we will provide it. But if any of you are in a reasonably well-off state and are feeling generous, we could sure use your help, and we'd appreciate it.
Well, it's incredible work you're doing, Stan. Absolutely incredible. And I go into a deep, long period of thought every time I have a conversation with you, and tonight has been no exception. So I want to thank you for being with us, and we will have you back yet again, no doubt, because as you mentioned, the audience reacted in mass, and I'm sure we'll get that again.
Well, I'd really be pleased, and there's a lot more that we didn't get to that we promised, so let's do it as soon as you'd like.
That's why there's always a next time. Stan Tenen, thank you.
Thank you, too.
Good night. All right, that's it, folks. That's all there is tonight. And we will be back tomorrow evening. It's going to be a very, very interesting week. Tomorrow evening, the Cassini mission with Carl Grossman. Wait till you hear about that. Coming up this Friday night, Saturday morning, Father Malachi Martin. For those of you that have been looking forward to another appearance, that'll be Friday night, Saturday morning, and there may be yet more to come. So, as the old expression goes, stay tuned. Same place, same time, same station. Good night.